You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From the rolling bluffs of the Driftless region to the pristine shorelines of Superior in Michigan, from the Northwoods to the Kettle Moraine, Civic Media broadcasts across all of Wisconsin. For all of Wisconsin. Take a trip with us across the radio network to hear from communities throughout the state. This is the Civic Media Spotlight.
Welcome to the Civic Media Spotlight. To kick us off, we have Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Pete talks about the Freezing Man Festival in Madison, a star-studded music event aimed at raising funds for epilepsy through Joey's song. The festival promises unique performances where artists play covers and each other's hits. Founder Mike Gomel shares heartfelt insights about the event's mission, honoring his late son Joey.
Welcome back. I'm Pete Schwabe. This is Nightlight. Great to have you with me here on this beautiful Tuesday night in the state of Wisconsin, ladies and gentlemen. Christmas is just around the corner. There's a nip in the air. And we are broadcasting statewide from downtown Green Bay. Lots going on here lately. We had a skier outside the window last night.
Yeah.
We got a girl in a wheelchair, our friend Sarah, who is recuperating. She'll be our Nightlight window fun slash love tonight on social media. So check out Sarah and wish her a speedy recovery, if you will. Great guest tonight, too, folks. We've got in-studio entertainment in hour number two. Comedy City will be here talking about a lot of fun events they have coming up. And they're going to do a little improv for us. And then comedian Boris Hamilton will be here in the third hour, too. We'll be talking Christmas movies and a really cool documentary he was part of that we're going to discuss and go into a little bit of detail on. Should be fun. Right now, I'm excited to welcome my next guest. This is his first time on Nightlight. He is the founder of Joey's Song, an organization that tries to raise money for epilepsy and uses great music and a great music festival to do it. Joining me now is Mike Gomel. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Pete.
How are you?
You know what? It's not so bad. I'm down here in Madison, and it's a lot warmer than it was a couple days ago, so I'm not going to complain.
Yeah, I'll take it. I'm not a cold weather guy. Conrad and I complained about the weather all the time, yet we choose to live in Wisconsin, so it's kind of a pointless exercise, but
I'm a lifelong Wisconsinite, except for when I moved way down south to Chicago, so that shows you... That shows you what a Yankee I am. So, yeah, I got no right to complain either.
You know what's funny? I spent the first part of my childhood in Chicago. I moved up to Marinette, Wisconsin, went back to Chicago for college. So I tell this story like I'm kind of a man between two. Like I'm a cheesehead when I'm in Chicago and I'm a fib when I'm here. people don't accept me in either place. But I do laugh because in Chicago when I was in college, people would ask me where I'm from. And I would tell them, and it's 4 hours north, and they'd go, oh, man, you're way up there. And these would be people from Appleton saying, oh, you live way up. And then I moved to L.A. for 15 years, and I'm like, it's all the Midwest, and it's freezing, you know?
And we'll get into that, I'm sure, as we talk, but that's part of my dilemma as I'm recruiting all these artists from L.A. to come to Madison, Wisconsin in January. It involves a lot of finagling, shall we say.
Yeah. But you know what? The cause is so great. I'm sure you have no trouble. And I've heard how, you know, Frank, a shout out to our pal Frank Anderson, who introduced us, and he's a big part of Joey's Song as well. And so it's great to meet you, Mike. It's great to have you here. Let's jump right in and talk about this just absolutely wonderful event you have coming up January 8th through the 12th at the Sylvie, Joey's Song. Tell us a little bit of the background.
So Joey's Song is in memory of my son, Joe, who unfortunately passed away after battling a severe form of epilepsy his entire short life. He died just shy of his fifth birthday. Epilepsy is a spectrum disorder. It's got a myriad of causes and a myriad of ways that it manifests itself. And Joe, unfortunately, was born with a chromosomal disorder. I can never say that properly, but that's because I need to put in my polygrip. But in his brain... stuff that was supposed to go left was going right, and it caused all sorts of problems. And so even when Joe was still with us, I had thought about trying to do something to try to raise money for the next family, something we still say here in Joey's Song. But at that point, I had a child with severe special needs, as well as Joe's older brother and sister, and that we were just trying to make it to bedtime. You know, but once Joe passed away, I started to kind of flex some old muscles. I didn't do this as a career, but back in Madison in the 80s when I was in school here, I worked at a club called Headliners, which had a lot of bands on the way up. We always referred to it as we had the MTV bands on the way up and the 60s bands on the way down kind of thing. Nice. Thousand seat venue. I did not go on to do that, but I've always been kind of a music person. And the one golden thread out of that, there was another fella kicking around Madison at the time called Butch Vig. And Butch and I ran in the same circles, and he went off to win Grammy Awards and MTV Moon Men, and I did not. But when it came time to try to start this effort that we now call Joey Song, it would have been a fool's errand for me to call anybody but Butch.
Wow, that is so great. And talk about, man, so you've got this friend who helps you get this thing off the ground, and he's a music, he's just a music legend. I mean, the Smart Studio story, his connection to Wisconsin is great, and he's just conquered the music world.
Yeah, when you've won a Grammy for producing Paul McCartney, that's the mountaintop. So,
you know, just a quick aside about Butch Vig. I've had the opportunity to interview him twice, once on PBS Wisconsin, and Wendy Schneider was there. I'm sure you know Wendy.
Oh, yeah.
We were in the green room. He's really funny. He kept doing this voice about the frozen tundra or something like that. Like he was going to break into the frozen tundra. You know, I wasn't expecting that.
No. First of all, and all your listeners locally, there is no larger Packer fan in the world than Butch. I would defy it. There's a bunch of us, including our friend Frank, that have this text thread that has been going on for years, and it centers around the Packers. And Butch was sitting in the airport on Sunday down in Melbourne. Garbage just finished up their Australia tour and was complaining because the Wi-Fi was so bad he couldn't watch the Packer game.
Oh, boy.
So that tells you all you need to know. But yeah, he's just a straight shooter, a good guy. And I don't know what I did to deserve a friend like him, but thank goodness I got him.
Well, you're the driving force behind this, Mike, and it's just such a great event. And tell us a little bit about, like, it was a one-night event until recently, and now it's a whole festival, the Freezing Man Festival. Am I getting that right?
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah, so we just talked a little bit about me trying to get these people from L.A. to come out in January, and all of them assume that, you know, we are all don't move for 4 months up here. And so rather than fight it, instead of Burning Man, we're leaning right into it and calling it Freezing Man. So that's the idea behind it. And really, it's one of these things that has evolved. It was not always what it is now. So I probably should go back and answer your first question, which is, what is the Joey Song Freezing Man? So what we do, I'll try to summarize it. So many of the folks we just mentioned, Butch and Frank and our pal Corey Chisel and Alex Drossert and a lot of those guys from up there in the Green Bay Appleton area, along with Butch and Duke Erickson from Garbage and Freddy Johnston, have this kind of knockaround band they call the Know It All Boyfriends. It's
love
basically a chance. Yeah, it's a chance for them to get silly and play stuff they don't normally play and have a few beers. And so what they do is they serve as a house band, for lack of a better phrase. And we bring in all these amazing people. I will break some news that I just found out about 25 minutes ago. I'll save it for the end of the roster here, but we've added a new guest literally just 25 minutes ago. So we've got Jane Wiedlin and Gina Schock from the Go-Go's and Vicki Peterson from the Bangles and John Resnick from Goo Goo Dolls and Hugo Burnham from Gang of Four. Chris Collingwood from Fountains of Wayne, Max Collins from Eve Six, on and on and on and on. And we just added a few days ago, Kurt Smith from Tears for Fears.
Oh, wow, and nice.
I just found out about 20 minutes ago that Matt Sorum from Guns N' Roses is joining us as well. So we've got amazing people. They all come to Madison, and we put on these concerts. This year, we're putting on one acoustic storyteller's night, and another one will be a full-blown jam. And the best part of it is they don't play their songs. They play each other's and covers, right? Because for a lot of these people, you know, they play their hits 207 nights a year, right? And so the fact that they can play a Beatles song with, you know, the guitarist from Fountains of Wayne and Jody Stevens from Big Star and, you know, so on, it's just an amazing thing, and it's really full of these one-off musical moments that happen, and that's the best way I can describe it to people. You get these amalgam of Grammy winners and Rock and Roll Hall of Famers all getting together and playing AC/DC. It's truly, if I won't sprain my elbow patting myself on the back, it is truly, truly spectacular. And I don't want to overblow it like this was some grand plan I had. This has just evolved into it, and it's a glorious thing.
Mike Amal is my guest. He is the founder of Joey Song, an event he founded on behalf of his late son, and they try to raise money for epilepsy. And I love that none of the bands, Mike, take money. Nope. And you've all those names you just mentioned, like, this would be a great event, even if it wasn't for a good cause. It would be an incredible festival, right?
Yeah. Pete, that's a great point you made about the artist. I need everybody to know all those people I just named and a few that I didn't because I'm slowing down in my old age and I don't have it written down in front of me. All come to Madison for 4 or 5 days. Most everybody will come in on Wednesday. We'll rehearse all day Thursday, do shows on Friday and Saturday, rehearse on the, and you know, they get a ham sandwich and 2 beers is, you know, their payment for it. And you know, I don't know what Butch gets for a day's work, but I guarantee you it's not that, you know, so.
Do you play?
And then, you know, the thing I got to throw on top of it for all of our Wisconsin listeners is the guy that keeps the whole night moving is everybody's favorite Wisconsinite, Charlie Barron. So Charlie plays kind of MC and ringmaster.
Does he do the Manitowoc Minute? Are you anticipating he's going to?
Well, I got to tell you, 2 years ago, he sang.
Oh, dear. How was that? Was he good?
Oh, yeah. He and his pal Adam Gruhl from Horseshoes and Hand Grenades have a couple albums out. And they're what you would expect. They're, you know, they're songs about supper clubs and beer gardens. But, yeah, he's great. That's really great.
Fantastic. Wow. So you're like literally banging on all cylinders. You've got a great host, great bands. Do you play, Mike? Do you play with them?
No, but my son, my 23-year-old son, Sam, does. He's a singer-songwriter. And he gets to... I'll tell a quick aside if we've got a minute.
Sure.
A couple years ago, one of our guests was a guy called Brian Ray. And Brian's day job is he plays guitar with Paul McCartney and has for the last 30 years. And Sam, one of his first, he was 18 at the time, one of his first live performances, he sang on the stage at the Sylvie with Brian Ray, Butch Vig, Chris Collingwood, Freddie Johnston, and they sang Don't Let Me Down. So he's got all the talent in the family. I'm nothing compared to my son. And as you can tell, I'm darn proud of him as well. So I don't, but Sam does.
Way too humble there. And you look like a musician. You look like you're doing a behind the music or something. You got all this great paraphernalia behind you. How cool is that?
Well, I do. We also have a podcast. So most of these people come on and we talk and kind of do what you and I are doing. And since I'm in the middle of Joey Song International headquarters, otherwise known as my basement, we've got kind of all of this stuff going on to make it a little more rock and roll.
Were you at all concerned? I have to tell you, Mike, when I was doing stand-up in the 90s, I was working Myrtle Beach, and I had to introduce Huey Lewis in the News. And they were kind of on the, you know, the backside, I guess, of the career. Yep. It was like a 1,200-seat theater. And I had seen them at Summerfest. Like, that's the kind of the jump they took. At the time, Hootie and the Blowfish were all the rage. And I almost said Hootie and the News, which would have been horrible. Huey would have punched me on the way onto the stage. However, you have the Go-Go's and the Goo Goo Dolls. I don't know if you saw. Are you worried there's going to be a mix-up there?
Oh, yeah. The good news is that Jane Wiedlin is beautiful, and so is Gina. And John Resnick, according to the girls, is handsome. So I probably won't get those two things mixed up. But that's what Charlie's there for. My job is to come out for a little bit and just thank everybody. And I let the pros do the talking because you would not want me to do that.
It sounds like you've got an amazing event here. We'll have a couple more minutes with our guest, Mike Amal, the founder of Joey Song, on behalf of his son, doing great work trying to find a cure for epilepsy. And we'll give you some stats about epilepsy that you might not believe when we talk about them. That's coming up next with Mike Amal on Nightlight with Pete Schwab. Great to have you here, folks.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from 6 until 8 p.m. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we have the WXCO Morning Report with Chad Holmes. In this report, Chad speaks with 7th District Congressional candidate Fred Clark about his impact in northern Wisconsin.
It is the WXCO Morning Report on 98.9 WXCO. I am Chad Holmes, along with Ian Welsh, and we are continuing a conversation this morning with one of the candidates for the 7th Congressional District, Democrat Fred Clark. And one of the areas that you are talking about a lot is rural economy, rebuilding the rural economy, a big aspect of your site. And frankly, again, I think that Tom Tiffany has talked a pretty good game, but has not delivered for the rural folks in a very rural district. You look at the 7th, there's a big landmass, as you well know, having to travel around it. But in terms of really making the lives of the rural residents better, I think a lot is left to be desired. Can you talk about your priorities when it comes to rural issues, should you become a congressman?
Sure. Well, that's right. And the 7th CDs, as you said, it's a huge district. All are parts of 26 counties. Wausau and Superior are some of the bigger cities, but predominantly rural small communities. And who provides the jobs in those communities? Well, it's schools and local government, and then it's small businesses, and it's farming and it's forestry. That's our foundation for really the quality of life in our community, is it's what happens in those places. And we need policies that reflect that. We can't go chasing 1,000-foot deep holes in the ground or huge data centers as the sort of job creation for the North. That's not going to be sustainable, and it's not going to be providing the kind of long-term jobs that actually provide community prosperity. This tariff war, you know, the president's tariff war has created chaos for small businesses and manufacturers. I was just up in Wausau last week, Chad, when we talked to you. We'd visited the Sioux ginseng farms and learned about how Chinese markets that they spent years developing have been more or less wiped out overnight because of the president's tariff policy. Right now, we're landing a gut punch to people in rural Wisconsin because of issues like that and others. And Congress is not doing its job. If the goal of Congress is to reflect the people a congressional representative serves, they're not doing their job right now.
One way that a Democrat, well, a major way a Democrat can win in the 7th, which has not been occurring in the past decade and a half since Dave Obie retired after a long and successful tenure from you know, Wausau in the 7th, is to be able to talk to a lot of these rural voters. And it just feels as though often the eye is taken off the ball when it comes to economic issues to talk about more social issues. How do you try to break through to voters who may not have even considered Democrats in the past 10, 12, 14 years to open their minds up to your pitch? How do you go about trying to reach the voters that you're going to need in order to flip this district?
Well, that's a great question. And for Democrats who have really not done well in rural areas for the last decade or more, we need to learn the lessons, or the party, I should say, needs to learn the lessons that a lot of rural people, yeah, they want to know what your policies are, but they want to know who you are. If you feel like you're being preached to or talked down to by some college-educated person out of the cities, well, that just doesn't fly. And so relatability is important. Having a lived experience that people can relate to is really important. I'm somebody who's lived and worked outdoors in Wisconsin for 35 years. That'll always be part of who I am. And then you have to listen. So rather than showing up and telling everybody why they're wrong, any good candidate for office needs to show up and listen. And even with people who disagree with you, my instinct is to look for that common value. What are the things we can agree about, and how do we start a conversation from there? Most of us agree that we want to live in prosperous communities where everybody does well. Well, let's start the conversation there and figure out the best ways to get there.
Another topic that you highlight, both on your website and I think in your campaign, is healthcare, and that is headline news this week. In fact, just a couple of nights ago, I went back. I'm on the exchange. Okay. I renewed same healthcare that I have this year. My premium is $307. Next year, it's $877. I mean, I pushed it back. I did not look at it until last evening. And it you talk about the term sticker shock, and I know that I'm not the only one out there. How do you look at the healthcare issue? Also, again, I think I'm going to try to broaden it a little bit in terms of talking to the people of the 7th that you need to have listened to you. Are they at the point, whether it is tariffs, whether it's healthcare and other issues that are pocketbook issues, where it is truly I mean, you talk about inflation. That's inflation. I mean, I was sort of thinking, where am I going to cut back? Because that's a lot of money over a year.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw that out there. I mean, there's a lot there, but I mean, it's pretty crazy.
It's crazy. And it's terrible politics from their standpoint and from the president's standpoint. It's unbelievable to me that they think this is the strategy that's going to help them get reelected next year. But you are not unique by any means, Chad, especially for older Americans. I don't know how old you are, but let's say you're over 50. If you're between 50 and 64,
you're good. You're good. You're right. You're right in the right in the right ballpark there. I'm 55. We'll throw it right out there so you don't have to guess.
Perfect. 2 years ago, I was on the Affordable Care Act. So everybody in that age group is seeing massively increased premiums because of the failure to renew those credits. To do that, I believe, would have cost America something like $380 billion. If you recall, the big, beautiful bill was something like $3.4 trillion that they were going to add to the national debt so they can pay for these tax credits. We couldn't find barely a tenth of that to continue these tax credits while they can come out with a new plan to fix the Affordable Care Act that they've never done in 10 years. It's terrible politics. It's terrible for people who are seeing the increases you're talking about. You have to make a choice whether you're going to mine your retirement savings to remain covered or you're going to drop coverage. That has an effect that stresses the entire rural healthcare network. So these clinics are going to be more likely to close or limit their hours or see providers leave the area. And guess what? That affects everybody. So it's a terrible policy choice from their standpoint, and it's hurting people. They got 2 days to fix it. Yeah, at this point, it doesn't look like a good bet that they're going to.
Coming up at 7:52, a few more minutes with Fred Clark, candidate on the Democratic side for the 7th Congressional District. Bottom of the hour information update, including the Farm Report and a whole bunch more coming up. I am Chad Holmes, along with Ian Welsh. It is the WXCO Morning Report on 98.9 WXCO.
The Chad Holmes Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on WXCO weekday mornings from 8 until 10. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we have, guess who? John and Gordy, but in the afternoon.
I never thought it was such a bad little tree. It's not bad at all, really. Maybe it just needs a little love.
John and Gordy talk with Mike McCabe about all things Christmas.
John and Gordy in the afternoon. Words of wisdom.
Charlie
yeah.
Brown is a blockhead. But he did get a nice tree.
I love Charlie Brown and Peanuts. I love that show.
Walking through the store, they had one of those trees, the Charlie Brown tree.
Did you get one?
No, I really wanted to get it, though.
My mom did.
So miserable looking. It really is great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And we have, of course, you know, a little blue blanket that we wrapped around the base.
Oh,
yeah.
How cute.
Well, you can't really hang anything on it. There's not really much there.
Oh, no. You can hang the one red ornament on it. Any more than that, it starts to...
If the blue blanket's on there.
That's right.
Exactly.
It's John and Gordy, along with our guest, who we have in just about every Wednesday, Mike McCabe. Good to see you, Mike.
Good to see you guys.
It's that time of year, and you wrote your latest Substack article mentions Charlie Brown and the Charlie Brown Christmas.
Just needs a little love.
Yeah, that's the title of the article.
That's what it is.
Just needs a little love.
Well, tell us what you were talking about in this article.
Well, just, you know, meaning of Christmas, and but it did lead me to, you know, into the thicket of the topic that you guys were just discussing in the previous half hour.
AI
and data centers and all of that, you know, technology and its effects on us. And you know, the thing about Christmas, regardless of how you think about the birth story of Jesus of Nazareth, whether you're a church goer or not, you know, one of the things I wrote is that Christmas is worth celebrating because of what it does to us.
Yes.
It slows us down. It makes us step away from the material pursuits and the workaday worries, and it makes us more generous. I used to run a nonprofit organization. Over half of our operating revenue came in the last couple of months of the year, the holiday season.
Sure.
It's amazing how much more charitable giving is done in November and December than as opposed to the rest of the year, because people are just much more generous. They're more patient with one another. They're more kindly to each other. Christmas has a remarkable effect on us, and that's worth celebrating, regardless of whether you are have a religious persuasion or if you're completely secular. It's still it has an undeniably remarkable effect.
Yeah, we have a text here. Do you mean it slows you down and makes you a non-material type person? Have you?
A little bit more.
Have you been out there Christmas shopping, stressing over gifts at all? Yeah, here's the thing. You know, maybe you don't buy for yourself. Unintentionally, you do anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're really looking to get a gift for somebody else.
Correct.
Yeah, and that's the spirit that you're talking about.
And how often do we spend our time thinking about what kind of gift we could give to somebody else, a loved one or a friend or family member or whoever? And so it does have a remarkable effect on us.
And there's more volunteering going on this time of year too.
Absolutely,
you know, at kitchens and homeless centers,
absolutely,
all of that.
Yeah,
that time of year.
What does it say about us as we go out and get gag gifts for everybody we love so dearly? What does
is that what your family does?
It seems like that's the way everything has gone. You know? I mean, because, you know, as adults, we buy what we want, right? We already get everything that we want to buy. So we really don't have a list of things that we can give somebody and say, well, this is something I've been hoping to get real soon. You know, it's usually very expensive normally.
Well, my Substack article started with, you know, some thoughts about Charlie Brown, but it did lead me to, you know, the conclusion of the article really is about how we are growing less connected.
Yes.
As a society, we are less connected to neighbors and to friends and even family members. And that's reflected in a lot of different ways. And technology has a lot to do with that. And then I embedded a clip that I understand that you guys are prepared to play, that a University of North Carolina psychology professor hit the nail on the head, said what I was thinking. So I decided to share that.
All right.
This is from 60 Minutes.
60 Minutes. Yeah. Let's listen.
From a scientific point of view, what do you see happening to this generation if we don't get kind of a grasp on all this?
It's not an exaggeration to say that the essence of our species, of humanity, is our social relationships. Dare I say, it's the meaning of life. We are fundamentally changing life, our species, when we outsource our social relationships to bots and for profit. Those little interstitial moments that we have talking to someone behind a counter, having a connection with a human, that means something. That has an effect on our physical health, not to mention our happiness and our mental health and our, you know, competence as parents and coworkers. We are at the brink of having more relationships with tech than with humans for the first time in the history of our species. This is the moment to say, wait, why are we doing something to make someone else a profit rather than doing something that will affect my own well-being and my family's and children's well-being? I'm not saying throw all the devices away. I'm not saying that this should be the end of tech. I'm talking about moderation, balance, and awareness that we are doing something at the behest of folks who want to make a profit from our data. And it's time to flip that. Take control back. Vote with your fingertips. Put the device down. Set a limit. And reclaim what it means to be human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's it.
Very important to at least, you know, create some balance. You know, I think tech has been moving very quickly along here, and we've been all caught up in it without actually thinking about maybe setting some time limits on what we do with tech and what we do with our families.
And, you know, reclaim what it means to be human. That's,
yeah,
to me, that's that's a theme that has taken on such great importance in the present moment. And all of this has moved so fast. I'm a parent of a 26-year-old son. So it was not very long ago that he was in elementary school and middle school, high school. He graduated from high school in 2018, not very long ago. I don't remember at any point during his upbringing, throughout all of his education, I don't remember a single teacher telling me that they were just at wit's end about all these doggone phones, that they couldn't get the kids off the phones. And, mm-hmm. and my son started out school, and he didn't have a smartphone. And he was in school, and not all the kids had smartphones. And not the teachers didn't have so much trouble getting the kids away from their devices during learning time. So in this really brief period of time from when Casey finished high school in 2018 to the current moment, now you've got teachers who are just beside themselves. They mm-hmm. they don't know what to do
right.
with how technology is interfering with the educational process, and it's leading states to actually ban cell phones in classrooms. And Wisconsin has now passed a law that will phase in here in another year or so that requires every school district to have a plan for banning cell phones in the classroom. Mm-hmm. That wasn't even under discussion during the entire time my son was going to school. That's how fast all this is moving and how quickly it's changing our society and our world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we've got another point of view on this. It means less with school shootings, public shootings, can't buy a home, can't afford groceries. This guy in the video has no idea why people are connecting with tech. He comes across like a crazy boomer.
But wait a second. You know, as Bernie Sanders was saying in that clip mm-hmm. you played in the previous half hour, mm-hmm. you know, all of this is going to radically transform our economy and do away with a whole bunch of existing jobs. So if people think that somehow tech is going to be their economic savior, there's going to be an awful lot of people who will be dislocated from their current professions, their current occupations. And how are they going to afford housing and food and everything then when they have no source of income, unless our society comes to grips with the effects of the billionaires using this technology to do away with human labor,
yeah.
and we find ways to create a supportive society.
Now, you know, you're familiar with Mark out in Prairie du Sac, right?
Mark,
one of our regular callers.
One of our regular callers, yeah. and he has, you know, I'd like Mark to actually call up about your what you're saying here. He says, Mike is saying, or paraphrasing, Scrooge's nephew's speech to him.
So
it must be where his nephew visited him at the office, and, you know, they had that little back and forth.
Yeah.
So it must be that speech. I don't have it here in front of me. There is also this, that in teacher forums, they're not so much angry with the phone use as they are with the parents not teaching the kids not to use the phone so often. You know, yeah, I've said that before, though. I think a lot of parents, bad parents, are, you know, foisting a lot of the responsibilities off onto the schools and the teachers, where they should actually be trying to control some of this stuff instead of blaming teachers and the school regulations for it.
Well, but, you know, that whole 60-minute segment mm-hmm. that clip was drawn from, that's a very brief part of, mm-hmm. of the interview with that particular North Carolina University professor. But they also did interviews with parents who were talking about how their children were using ChatGPT yeah. for counseling.
Right.
For
oh my gosh,
you know, for
really.
Like companionship yeah. or
yeah.
friendship.
Yeah.
And they were, and some of the parents were recounting how ChatGPT was telling their kids that all of their, you know, the anguish that they were expressing was all justified, and that their your parents don't understand you. And and ChatGPT actually said to one of these parents' kids, your parents don't love you.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so and the kids are sort of turning to the on the device, and they're turning to ChatGPT and sort of venting about their problems and asking for advice, and they're taking advice from a bot that is doing what it's doing not for the well-being of the child, but rather simply for child engagement. They're the device isn't interested in child well-being. It's interested in child engagement. Just keep the kid online.
Right.
Keep the kid trapped.
Yeah.
And tell the kid whatever the kid wants to hear.
Yeah.
That works at cross purposes what actual parenting is all about.
Yeah, that's not helpful.
Pretty outrageous of AI to suggest something
that. It's worth going back and finding that entire 60-minute segment if you haven't seen it. It's the episode that started out with an interview with Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Okay.
It moved on to a segment all about AI and its effects.
Yeah, it's really good.
It will be really
eye-opening.
All right. Yeah.
A couple of weeks ago.
We're going to be back with Mike McCabe. We've got our phones back up and running, so if you want to jump in, 855-752-4842. Back with more of John and Gordy in a moment.
John and Gordy in the Afternoon is part of the Civic Media Radio Network, airing weekday afternoons from 2 to 5. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the Civic Media website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Next up on the Civic Media Spotlight, we have, guess who? John and Gordy, but in the afternoon. John and Gordy have a continued conversation with Mike McCabe on Christmas shenanigans and what makes a parent, quote-unquote, bad.
Well, you might want to check ChatGPT. All right, anyway, let's go to the phones right away. This is John and Gordy in the afternoon. Go to Kurt here. What do you got for us, Kurt?
Yeah, you know, I worked in a software validation lab for years at Motorola. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I know that any cellular company can do if they choose to do so is they go to any cell phone manufacturer and saying, we want this feature installed in on our phones, or a phone that's dedicated that has the feature in it. And that feature would be basically controlling what the user has access to. So it doesn't block them from launching a browser and doing a search, but if they try to do a search on certain keywords, it would shut them out. And not only that, it sends alert to the parent. So, you know, I hate to be big brother over kids, but let's just face the facts. This stuff wasn't present when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And we did a lot of extracurricular activities to keep ourselves occupied. And now these kids, like you pointed out, using ChatGPT and says, you know, your parents don't love you. So parents, go start contacting your cellular provider and say, we want this product.
Mm-hmm.
It could happen.
Yeah. Good idea.
Kurt, thanks for that.
Yeah. I want to tell my story, though. You know, I was told by an insurance company, not my, but my parents were told by an insurance company that I should leave the house because I'm going to raise their rates on their car insurance. They told me I should move out. So that's before chat. But, you know, still, you know, it's a third party giving their advice. Let's go to Susan now from McFarland. What do you got for us, Susan?
I'm thinking about this. I would argue also this starts back with when we no longer let our kids be free range and hang out with friends, and everybody had to be in sports that were organized by the parents so they knew where their kids are. I think we lose a lot when you don't allow your children to explore as they're growing up and develop their own friendships, because then, you know, when they're denied that ability and then they just turn to their phone because it's much easier to get on your phone and find things that you want instead of being out there with your friends.
Yeah.
So I'm a big proponent of free range children. and I feel as though they grow a lot by having to a bike places during the sun, you know, the weather, going to their friend's house, all right. those things. And there's Life 360 that you can put on their phone, so you know exactly where they are.
Oh yeah,
because you know where they are, so you don't have to check in on them. But I think a lot of it is that there's no kids are no longer allowed to just be kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Keep going.
And I was just saying that during COVID, of course, that put a big kibosh on a lot of that social interactions.
Yep.
So for some of the groups of kids where they were at the perfect age where they would be forming those developmental friendships, so they weren't able to do that. So it could be some of that. But I do feel as though we're hamstring our kids by not allowing them just to be kids.
Yep. Right. Free-range kids. I like it, Susan.
Good point, Susan.
Yeah. In the old days, we used to have neighborhoods where you had friends in your neighborhood.
Yeah, I grew up on the farm, so we had free-range cattle and we had free-range chickens. And yes, we were free-range kids,
there
too.
You go. All right, let's go to Mark now. Mark, do you have that quote from Christmas Carol?
He started out talking about it being Christmas being a sacred time, but he goes, but apart from that, he goes, as a good time, a kind, forgiving, charitable, pleasant time, the only time I know of in the long calendar of the year when men and women seem, by one consent, to open up their shut up hearts freely, to think of people below them as if they are real fellow passengers to the grave, not another race of creatures bound on other journeys. Mm-hmm. And therefore, Uncle, there has never put a scrap of gold or silver in my pocket. I believe it has done me good and will do me good, and I say God bless it.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. I get goosebumps when I hear quotes out of a Christmas Carol.
Nothing like Charles Dickens.
Really? Nothing like it.
All right, Mark.
Mark, thanks for that. I appreciate you looking that
up. We got one more call. I think we can sneak in.
Dolores?
Dolores from Madison. Go ahead.
Oh, hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I was going to mention, I am a Generation X, so I didn't grow up with a phone or a computer or anything like that, but I can see the difference in my kids. I have an older kids and a younger kids, and I can see, my 29-year-old. I mean, she's even high anxiety to even talk to someone, over the phone, just to make a phone call.
Wow.
And I think, wow, it's just because I prefer text, I prefer emails. I don't want to talk to anyone, So it's just, sad.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I'm just so sad when I see, I understand, I understand you being a mom or, being so caught up, trying to juggle a lot of things.
Yeah.
And I see those little kids, a year old, glued to the tablets and glued to the phone.
Yep.
And then as soon as the parents had to take off the iPad or the phone, they just make this big tantrum because we are raising this generation of kids growing up with some kind of device glued to their hands.
Yeah.
And it's just sad, that we are the ones doing this
to
our generation.
That's true.
Yeah, so it's very sad.
Yeah, and when I was a kid, we had transistor radios and same complaints.
Right, yes. That was a long time ago.
Yeah. Well, Dolores, thank you.
Yeah, Dolores, we appreciate that call. Mike, we got to leave it there. Yeah.
Any final words on this?
Final thoughts for the holidays?
Well, enjoy the season.
There you go.
Happy holidays. And we'll
talk to you in a couple of weeks.
See you in the new year.
Yeah,
absolutely.
We appreciate you.
Great having
you here. Coming up in our next hour, we'll check in with George Cheng. He's co-founder of Code 4, talking more about AI. And also, we'll get the latest on the Judge Hannah Dugan trial with Mario Cora.
Yep.
It's all coming up on John and Gordy. Stay right where you are on the Civic Media Radio Network.
John and Gordy in the Afternoon is part of the Civic Media Radio Network, airing weekday afternoons from 2 to 5. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the Civic Media website at civicmedia.us/shows.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.